to hit that. I get to do this for the first time. We're going to start the meeting tonight of the California Fish and Game hearing on the abalone recovery plan. This is a hearing, a number of hearings that we're going to be having around the state. We had one in Santa Barbara last week. Obviously, we're here tonight. We're in Santa Rosa in August 4th, Eureka, August 9th, and San Diego, August 16th. We all know this is a long time in coming and trying to come up with some kind of plan, and we want to hear from the public and the stakeholders about what they think about all of this. So we'll be doing that in 1 second. I'd like to introduce a few people that are here. First of all, to my left is Commissioner Richard Rogers of Carpinteria, California. Carpinteria, I always call it Carpinteria. here he is. Adriana Shea, who's our executive assistant at the executive analyst. I'm sorry, for the Department of Fish and Game. We have Gary Stacey, the regional manager of the Marine Division. We have Ian Taniguchi, who's with the Department of Fish and Game. We have John Ugaretz, who's a member, staff person extraordinaire of the Fish and Game Department in the Marine Region. And I think that's what we have. Who am I? You're pointing at somebody. Mm. Oh, my God. Yes. I forgot your name, and I know you. Thank you. And he's here, too. We're all here. We have a warden out back, Rebecca. And I forgot her last name, but she's fabulous. Okay, so what we're going to do is hear from folks, and we'll try to keep people's comments to 3 to 5 minutes, I think. And right now we only have 2 cards. So if you want to speak, turn in some cards.
Great. Speaker cards are in the back if you missed them. And I can
hand them to Adriana, and we'll start, you know, calling people. And like I said, this is to gather information. I know personally, and I know you know, Commissioner Rogers has said the same thing. This is a new issue to us. A lot of you have been here, obviously, for many, 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 many years. And we're learning, and we have to vote on a recovery plan eventually based on the information that you folks give us and the department gives us and the things we learn on our own. So we really do want to hear from you and hear what you have to say. And if you know us, you know that we listen for the most part, even if we don't agree with you all the time. So here we are, and let's start the hearing.
Okay. If I may apologize prematurely, perhaps, I have to leave at 8 o'clock to make a flight back to Los Angeles because I have something in Los Angeles tomorrow morning I cannot get out of, so my apologies.
We might be done by then. Oh, well, that's true, and we're going to do that first. Sorry, everyone. This is my first time I've ever chaired a meeting. The department will do a presentation first, and then the public will be heard. Okay, sorry. So, John, are you doing the presentation? Or? Ian, thank you. Mr. Taniguchi, thank you.
Thank you. My name is Ian Taniguchi. I'm with the Department of Fish and Game in Los Alamitos. I am the statewide coordinator for the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan. And I'm here tonight to give you a brief summary over the ARMP. Looking at some of you out in the audience, you've heard this before, so this will be a repeat. This is the second in the ARMP roadshow, so here we go. The draft Abalone Recovery and Management Plan provides a cohesive framework for recovery of depleted stocks in Southern California, as well as for management of Northern California red abalone fishery and all future fisheries. The purpose of the plan is to provide a guideline for managing and preventing further declines of all abalone species throughout the state and to ensure that current, future, and future populations are sustainable. The ARMP consists of 2 stages, the interim plan and associated management goals, and also the long-term plan and associated management goals. The interim management and recovery plan also use available funding and data and become effective upon approval of the ARMP. To begin with, I would like to first sort of describe the overall approach we use in the management plan for both recovery and management. The concepts that are shown are purely conceptual, and which you will see on this graph, and it's only we only use this graph to describe the approach we are using in the plan. And to begin with, for the recovery portion of the plan, which pertains to all the populations of abalone that are in poor condition, such as those that species that occur in Southern California, we expect through the recovery process that recovery will follow an idealized trajectory through time as a result of natural processes or through recovery efforts on our part to a point where there would be a surplus that could support a fishery. While that recovery is occurring, we are recommending no harvest at this time. Once populations reach the sustainable fishery level, we can consider opening a fishery. And now if we hop over to this second portion of the plan, which deals with management, which are for populations that are in relatively good conditions, such as the Northern California Red Abalone fishery, we hope to manage the fishery in a manner that would continue to abalone stock abundances above the sustainable fishery level. However, if it does happen, if stocks do decline below this level, we are recommending a ratcheting down of the harvest pressure within this precautionary zone. And we would eventually keep ratcheting down the harvest until a point where we would close the fishery at a point that is above the minimum population level necessary to sustain a viable population in the absence of harvest pressure. The main concept we want to get to you on this graph and the overall approach is that we're suggesting two different approaches within this precautionary zone between fishery closure and sustainable fishery level. And as depending on whether the population is recovering, which I said we advocate no fishing, and or has been sustaining a harvest, which we would advocate ratcheting down of the take. There are some main key density numbers that we use in criteria for both recovery and management within the plan. And these numbers are, first of all, the sustainable fishery density, which is 6,600 abalones per hectare. And then the second important criteria is the minimum viable population density, which is set at 2,000 abalones per hectare in the plan. There is a third density, which is used in management portion of the plan, and that is for closure of the existing fishery, and that is at 3,000 abalones per hectare. I would next like to describe some of how we derive the density criteria for sustainable fishery and minimum viable population. First, I'll describe minimum viable population. MVP is the minimum threshold density level at which the population can sustain itself. In other words, if the population density falls below this level, there are not enough individuals to effectively reproduce and sustain the population. And this is in the absence of a fishery or any human take. The density criteria for minimum viable population is, again, set at 2,000 abs per hectare. And the MVP density was based on published research of other species of abalone, as well as data on collapsing red abalone stocks in Southern California. And what you see up here is actually an updated graph as of last meeting. This is Santa Rosa Island National Park Service data for Santa Rosa Island. And you can see back when the kelp forest monitoring survey started in 83, we had populations or densities around 1,500 abalones per hectare and has continued to decrease down until 97, where the fishery closed, and from 97 on, it's still been at very low levels. Now, for the sustainable fishery level or density, this was derived from survey data from three long-established fishery index sites in Northern California. We used the number of abalone per hectare from all depths from the surveys at three sites and through time. And using the data from 1999 and 2000, the average density from those three sites turns out to be 6,600 abs per hectare and was selected because it represents the best estimate of the sustainable densities supporting the ongoing fishery under current conditions. The sustainable fishery level density at deep depths was established in the same fashion using the same data source, which I'll get into more when I talk about the management portion of the plan. But that density is set at 3,300 abalones per hectare. These are values using the best available data, and we do recognize there are certain limitations, and I'll also mention that when I get into the management portion of the plan. But first of all, I would like to go over the recovery portion of the plan. The geographical area involved includes the current moratorium area excluding the area occupied by sea otters. And it considers the individual status of all seven species in Southern California and red abalone along the San Mateo County coast and the Farallon Islands. As required, the plan provides both interim and long-term goals for the recovery effort. And our interim goals are, there are two interim goals. First one is reverse the decline of abalone populations that are in jeopardy of extinction. And the second interim goal is to rebuild populations to self-sustainability throughout their historic range. And by self-sustaining, we mean that populations can continue on to survive on their own without human aid. And our long-term goal is to rebuild populations to fishable levels in at least three-quarters of the historic range for each species. The conceptual framework for the recovery plan is shown up here, and it's a stepwise process. It shows that recovery is intended to be a sequential, a stepwise process that relies on changes in criteria to determine whether we should move on to the next step or next level of recovery, or continue on the current step. There are two variables that are used to assess the status of recovery and at different points in time. The first one is a size-based criterion, or criterion one, which you see at the top there. And that is, we use a size-based. And the other two criterion are density-based criteria, as we use in the criterion two and three. When criterion three has been satisfied, the population has reached the fishable level. At this point in time, in the planning and recovery effort, that stage appears to be many years away. Recovery of abalone populations to this stage will most likely take decades. The sequential stepwise process will require each recovery criterion to be satisfied before going on to the next one. And for the first criteria, the plan proposes to use a size-based measure, where we determine whether there are abalone within a broad range of size classes within two groups. And the two groups are intermediate sizes, which are abalone between 4 inches and the recreational minimum legal size for each species, and then large sizes, which are everything greater than recreational minimum legal size. Once criterion one has been satisfied, the next criterion is our first density level, which is set at MVP, which is 2,000 abalones per hectare. And after criterion two is satisfied, criterion three would be our final density level, which is the fishery level, reaching 6,600 abs per hectare in three-quarters of the recovery areas. Now, another part of the recovery plan is sort of the spatial component to recovery. And this map shows you the red abalone recovery areas for red abalone. Data that was collected for this criteria was collected within species-specific recovery areas that are determined using commercial landing block data and known recreational fishing areas. And for the red abalone, you can see there's a five different recovery areas. We have Central California, the red box at the top. We have three islands, San Miguel Island, Santa Rosa, Santa Cruz, and San Diego. Each one of those is what we consider a recovery area. Now, within each of the recovery areas, we have smaller areas called key locations where abalone have been known to occur. And from key locations, we have also picked a subset of the key locations as index sites. And this is where a majority of the recovery assessment and enhancement activities will occur. It is important to note that each criteria has a different spatial component to fulfill. For criterion one, must be satisfied at all index sites. Criterion two densities must be achieved at all key locations. And criterion three needs to be satisfied at three-quarters of the recovery areas. The plan also addresses the potential loss of recovery areas. The plan recognizes that suitable abalone habitat within recovery areas may change over time to a point where there is no longer suitable for abalone. Therefore, alternative index sites may replace current elected ones to account for environmental changes. It is also possible that entire recovery areas may become unsuitable for abalone recovery, such as through otter reoccupation, disease, or pollution. If 50% of the recovery areas for a species is lost, the plan's preferred option suggests that the long-term recovery goal of fishery cannot be achieved, And the interim goal of reestablishing self-sustaining populations becomes the long-term goal. Next, I would like to go over the management portion of the plan. And the abalone management plan considers the current freedive-only red abalone fishery, which occurs in north of San Francisco. The plan will also apply to all Southern California abalone fisheries that reopen following recovery and with adjustments to accommodate their different species. Similar to recovery, we have developed both interim and long-term management goals. The interim plan has more coarse or crude management adjustments and is based on available funding and data that would become effective upon plan approval. The long-term plan has more refined management adjustments but requires more data, resources, and further development and funding. The interim plan suggests managing the fishery on a broad and fine scale using two management measures: an adjustable fishery-wide TAC, or total allowable catch, and the ability to close severely depleted sites, which while stocks at those sites recover. Guidance on when changes in the management approach need to be considered are based on changes in several criteria, which we use to evaluate population health. Guidance on changing the management approach is laid out in several decision tables. The criteria used in the decision tables are listed here. The first two criteria are used in the TAC decision table, and criterion 3 is used in the area closure decision table. The first criterion is a measure of recruitment, or the addition of new abalone into the population. This criterion is based on the abundance of smaller adult abalone that have emerged from their cryptic boulder habitat. And for red abalone, that's, again, abalone is between the sizes of 4 and 7 inches. We use this criteria to determine if there is adequate replacement of abalone to sustain the fishery. The second criterion uses density to evaluate changes within fish population by using two density targets, sustainable fishery and MVP. For the first target, sustainable fishery, we do use two different types of density criteria. The first one is the overall density of abalone in all depths to determine whether population can sustain fishing pressure. Secondly, we use the density in deeper water to determine a rough assessment of the refuge population. And for the deep water refuge population, that is defined as anything greater than 27 feet. And the second density criterion or target is the minimum viable population level, which is used to guide decisions on when the fishery should be closed. And finally, the third criterion is a set of measures or variables to help guide decisions on when the site-specific closure should be considered. This second decision table is based on changes in catch per unit effort and changes in distance traveled from access points to take abalone. What you see here is the TAC decision table, and the plan uses the first two criteria in the TAC decision table, and measures for these criteria are obtained from 8 fishery index sites in Northern California. This plan organizes guidance or actions based on how the assessment of these criteria might change through time. Changes in two measurable criteria, recruitment and density, guide actions that adjust the TAC, and under extreme conditions, potential fishery closure. In the event of fishery closure, it establishes the guidelines under which the fishery may be reopened. Although the decision table can guide the level at which the TAC is set, in reality, the interim plan relies on a limited set of management tools to regulate the take. And these tools are the daily and annual limit and monthly or seasonal closures. The second decision table is the area closure decision table. And measures of this criteria in this table are based on information obtained during our biannual creel surveys at 8 different sites of fishery sites in Mendocino and Sonoma counties. The guidance in this decision table affects actions at individual sites. As in the TAC decision table, changes in the measured variables or criteria are used to suggest specific actions, such as additional density surveys, area closure, or reopening a closed site. And it's important to note here that closure in this case, in this table, means area closure and not total fishery closure. The interim plan has several limitations that need to be recognized. First of all, The data used to guide most of the management decisions under the interim plan come from only 4 heavily fished and 4 moderately fished sites. If these sites are not representative of other locations or the condition of the fishery beyond those sites, the decision could be biased, although it would be biased on the conservative side of management. The TAC was calculated for the fishery as a whole and not allocated among sites. Consequently, individual sites can be overfished if a large portion of the TAC is taken from a small number of sites. The interim plan addresses site depletion by suggesting individual site closures, but data collection and analysis can slow response time. And finally, the methods used to control take are imprecise. TAC adjustments must be made in large increments because fine scale adjustments are not practicable at this time. And also, the TAC does not set an absolute limit on take. We addressed some of these concerns in the discussion of the long-term plan. The long-term plan considers the use of 3 approaches. First of all, the use of zonal management, or the division of the fishery into zones or regional subunits that can be managed more effectively than a single unit. The use of abalone tags. These tags could be issued to limit take from individual zones and to identify legally taken abalone. And the last thing there is we need more and better fishery data collection to obtain refined zone-specific information to be able to carry out zonal management. The plan provides alternatives for management, and the department's appraisal of each of these alternatives is discussed in detail in the plan. At this point in time, I will not go into the details because of time constraints, but basically I'll just go through a rough outline of the alternatives. Basically, there are 7 alternatives listed in the plan. The first 4 alternatives suggest some sort of opening of the fishery, limited fishery, within the moratorium area prior to full recovery. Then the last 3 alternatives, 5 through 7, suggest adjustments to the current Northern California red abalone fishery. Next, I'd like to go over a little bit of the summary of the public comment that was gathered during the 4 meetings, public meetings, that occurred last year late in 2003. The public comment on the draft ARMP was very diverse. I only provide a brief summary here, but you can find more details and for the most common comments on the yellow fact sheet, which we have handed out or available to you at this meeting. You can also look at Table G3 in Appendix G of the ARMP, where all the public comment from those meetings is recorded with the department's response. The comments can be broken into broad categories pertaining to recovery, management, and miscellaneous, which covers comments that cover both recovery and management issues. For recovery, the most common themes in comments included comments on recovery goals and criteria, opening a limited fishery, and comments and concerns about withering syndrome and sea otters. For management, some of the common themes were open the North Coast for commercial abalone fishing, utilize constituents and management processes, punch card issues, concerns over number of index sites, suggested regulation changes, and comments on alternatives. And then finally, the miscellaneous category, there are 2 common themes, comments on and concerns about poaching and MPAs. Ooh, what happened? Okay. We're near the end here anyway, so some of the major changes that happened to the ARMP during this time frame the commission had to draft ARMP. First of all, the executive summary was rewritten. Also, on Alternative 1, there was an amendment to Alternative 1, which we've labeled Option 1, which considers limited fishery and data assessment at gathering and assessment at San Miguel Island. There was additional index sites added to the interim plan, and finally, the peer review summary, and also all the public comments are added as appendices to the plan. And those are Appendix F and Appendix G. And that pretty much covers my presentation. If you have questions, I'm happy to try to answer them.
Well, I'm not. Yeah. Should we let? We don't normally do the audience staff back and forth kind of thing yet, but what we'll do is we'll hear from all of you and we'll ask questions, and if there's questions at the end, we'll let you direct them to the department, okay? We want to hear from everybody first before there's a whole debate going on. Do you have any questions, Commissioner Roger? Okay. Should we start the public?
Okay. Our first speaker is Don Thompson, followed by Gary Conklin.
Good evening, commissioners and members or department. My name's Don Thompson. I'm a former commercial abalone fisherman. I participated in the abalone fishery from 1995 to 1997 and entered into the fishery under the transferable permit program at the time. I'm sure you probably recognize me from last week in Santa Barbara. So I'll try not to repeat the information I gave you there. I'll try to give you some new information. Conceptually, I think the department's draft did a pretty good plan. From a conceptual standpoint, I see there's a lot of my input that's been reflected in there. I like their use of contingencies and that they're using specific criteria. They're using a total allowable catch. However, there's a lot of things that I think on the finer scale or the nuts and bolts of the thing is where I have a difference. I start to differ my opinions. I don't like when I see bias language in the plan, and I'll explain that a little bit more, or that the recovery goals are arbitrarily set at the density levels, and I believe they're unrealistic. And the estimated amount of time to reach the recovery goals, in my opinion, is not a reasonable amount of time to reach the ultimate goal, which is to reopen the fishery. There's some procedural issues, and some issues having to do with the way the peer review was handled. I'll try to move as quickly as I can. I noticed there was contingencies tonight that I hadn't realized before in the presentation to abandon the goal of reestablishing a fishery, if they lose a certain number of sites and stuff. And so, that kind of hit a nerve with me that there'd be those types of, that they're already thinking in that direction. Since the last meeting last week, I've spent some time reviewing the literature that that's related to this, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. We heard the department last week say that any alternative aside from the continuation of the closure would hinder the recovery process. And I think I don't know that I agree with that reasoning or with their reasoning why it may hinder that. And what I did was I went back and I reread this document. It's published by NOAA, or National Marine Fisheries Service. It's called Fisheries Management for Commercial Fishermen. And it explains the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation Management Act. And it breaks down in plain English how a stock is affected by the management. And it takes a hypothetical fish stock that's unfished, and that those, according to this research, that those populations have a tendency to be dominated by older and larger animals. And the population is weighted more towards the strongest animals and the oldest animals, and that the population size is generally limited by the carrying capacity of the habitat, primarily food supply. Then it goes on to explain, when you have a selective harvest and you remove those older and larger animals from the population, that they become replaced with more smaller and medium-sized animals. And so, essentially, according to this information, that the total number of abalones increases because there's more, the carrying capacity of the habitat allows for more small and medium-sized ones for the same amount of resource or food and so on. And so that becomes true up to a point when you harvest, that as long as they're replacing themselves and there's recruitment, that that if you go beyond that point, then you start reducing the harvest. So the department's argument that any fishery or any kind of fishery or any harvest is going to hinder the recovery of the abalones, you know, it kind of contradicts, or it's not consistent with this information. So I think there's reason to doubt there, you know, that the harvest would be detrimental to the resource or would slow the recovery process if it would effectively increase the biomass. So what my question would be for the department is, you know, does the department have some contrary scientific data that would you know, prove otherwise? And if they do, I'd like to know about it. You know, would Pete or Ian, you know, would you care to comment? Have I presented an accurate assessment?
I think the best way to do
data.
I think the best way to do this is to keep it flowing. No, I don't want to say you're not going to have your questions answered. Go ahead and have everybody testify.
Okay.
The department will be writing down questions people asked, and if they want to respond at the end, they can, and then you guys can ask them questions after that. And that way they will just keep it flowing rather than doing a back-and-forth debate kind of thing. But you have every right to ask a question, and we'll try to get you an answer.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks.
Now, my second question is regarding the size frequencies of the population. And I haven't quite decided if the department's goal of looking at size frequency and to go out and find a broad range of size classes in the populations is a good first goal. Part of that's predicated upon, you know, the information in the literature that I've reviewed that would indicate to me that you would, if you're not harvesting the population, that it may become dominated by the larger and older animals and you won't see as much recruitment as many of the smaller sizes. Now, I think the most important thing is that you have recruitment. However, trying to go out and find uniform sizes or a broad range of abalones in the population, size ranges, you know, in Mother Nature, it's variable, and the populations fluctuate. In some years, you have bumper crops, and some years, you don't have much recruitment. So I'm not sure that the size frequency basis of doing the initial analysis and an initial stock assessment, you know, and if that's a good starting point, you know, and you know, it would appear, at least from what I heard last week, was that the department is not using density to go out and measure the status of the resource. Now, the size frequency criteria is based upon their assumption that the densities are below the threshold to where you start looking at density. However, I don't know that that's valid because from reading the document, they haven't even done the initial stock assessment. So that may be a wrong assumption, and that may be unrealistic goal to set out to find populations with these characteristics. The stocks may already be above the density levels laid out in the plan to look at densities. I would like to see the department use density and use it when they do their stock assessment, and density over the amount of habitat. I couldn't find any scientific citation in the document of any scientific literature in the criteria referred to with their criteria one. So it may be in the bibliography. You know, they may not have taken a citation. I don't really know. But if it was cited, I would have tried to gone back and read it and see if it contradicts the information that I've read. Now, with the peer review process, at the time of the peer review, the document and the plan only had one alternative, the department's preferred alternative. It didn't include any of the other alternatives that you're being presented today. And I found out last meeting that the department, at the close of the informal period, after they finished receiving public comment on the draft document, right before they sent it to the peer review, they deleted all the citations from the text to make it a more user-friendly document. Well, to me, that kind of handicapped the peer reviewer's ability to go back and reread any of the literature if they wanted to validate or verify that what was being said was where it came from and was not taken out of context and so on. And then I understand they've reinserted those citations, so now it's in a proper scientific format. But it raises doubts to me about the validity of the peer review, and it's kind of a coincidence too that at that close of the public comment that I found a citation that didn't appear in the literature it was cited from, and I brought it to the attention of the department. And they removed it, but they never explained. I asked them to explain, how could that kind of a mistake happen? How could a citation that's said to be from a certain document or certain published scientific research enter into this document? Was it just a mistake? Did they cite the wrong paper? And they omitted it. They whited out all the references. Or all to the literature, then they sent the document to peer review. Then they got it back, then they reinserted the citation. So there's also a lot of language in the plan that talks about that places blame on the former fishery and alleged overfishing. Terms like serial depletion, and that's very sensational rhetoric. And the reason that I'm offended by this is that those claims have never been substantiated with data to quantify how much impact the fishery had on the resource. So there's no biomass number to measure the landings that were made against to say whether or not the resource was overexploited. So if you don't have an estimate of what the original resource was, you can't say that the amount that was harvested was too much, because you don't really know. You can't measure it. So that bothers me. I touch a little bit on biomass. And I feel that should be that's one of the management tools that the department's not using, that I've insisted or requested that they use. And You know, at the workshop in Santa Barbara in 2000, my request was that the department present a biomass estimate for red abalone in Southern California using the available data. Okay? And if they weren't comfortable with making that type of an estimation, to qualify it with what level of confidence they have and what factors would make them feel that it was not reliable or that there was lacking information or critical information that would give them a higher level of confidence. And I noticed in reading the document that the response to my request for them to make a biomass estimate is that data does not exist. Well, that wasn't my question. My question wasn't, does the data exist to make a biomass estimate? My question was, would you make an estimate using the available data? And so, you know, they've avoided talking about biomass, and it's, you know, I think that's a mistake. I think we need to measure these resources, get a handle on what the total amount of population is, and then try to figure out what kind of controls we need to put on it to make it a sustainable fishery based on the biology of the animal. You know, so I don't like the way that they've summarized the public comment and reworded the comments. That brings me to the question of habitat. Now, I'd like to know if the department has an estimate of the amount of habitat within the recovery areas specified in the plan. You know, how many hectares are you going to recover to your 6,600 density? You know, and how many of those hectares are at San Miguel Island? I did a little research of my own on the amount of habitat, and I went back to the department's own data. It was their published research, environmental impact report on sport abalone fishing, and the environmental impact report that they wrote on pink, green, and white abalone closure. And I came up with overall numbers for amount of habitat. Northern California, 3.8 kilometers square. Mainland, south of Point Conception, 17.35 kilometers square. And Channel Islands, 25.38 kilometers square. And I converted those to hectares so I could get a feel for how many hectares of habitat we're looking at. So I could multiply their density goal by those numbers and figure out what type of a biomass, target biomass, that they'll have once they achieve their 6,600 throughout 75% of the habitat. I was doing this on the way up here. I didn't have a calculator, and I wasn't able to come up with the final number. However, in alternative one of the plan that you have and that the department's presented, there's an estimate of the habitat for San Miguel Island using that same data. And it's the same data that Fish and Game has used to estimate the overall habitat. And it was around 4 square miles, which converted over to about 1,035 hectares. But let's round it. If we round it off to 1,000 hectares, the target biomass at 6,600 per hectare would be a population at San Miguel Island of 6.6 million abalones. So I think it's good to have a real number to get a feel for, you know, if how many is there and how much impact would it have if we harvested a little bit. Now, in the department's response to alternative one, they argue that biomass estimate would not stand up to peer review because it's too simplistic, because it merely took the number of abalones harvested right before the closure by the commercial fishermen times the density or the size frequency data that the department had of 1% and did the math backwards. So that's not true. Also included in alternative one was an estimate of habitat times density with known densities at the time of the closure, which also corroborated the 3 million abalone biomass that was presented. So they didn't acknowledge that. And that brings me to my next issue regarding density goals criterion 2 and 3. I'd like to know if the department has any evidence that Southern California densities were ever at densities similar to those in Northern California, the current density, the current 6,600 abalone goal, because I haven't seen it, and the justification that I've been given by the department for that number says the department feels that the 6,600 abalone per hectare density is a realistic goal at this time. This density goal is based on real density from Northern California red abalone stocks, although it is possible that Southern California abalone abundance may have been historically lower than Northern California. We do not have any hard evidence data that supports this hypothesis. Therefore, we must use Northern California red abalone data as the recovery goal until such time the data collected in Southern California suggests that this goal is not realistic. So there is no data to historic data to substantiate the densities wherever at that level. It's merely an existing density level that they found in their survey in Northern California. So if they have substantiating evidence that Southern California abalones were historically at higher levels, then let's see them. And at the time of the closure, the department presented density data to the commission, their original commission closure, which made comparisons over historic densities in Southern California that were between 600 to 1,000 abalones per hectare at the Channel Islands, declining to around 150 abalones per hectare. And that was presented in the department or the commission's findings and its statement of facts that it filed with the Office of Administrative Law in Sacramento at the time of the closure as the evidence that the resource needed to be protected. So 600 to 1,000 abalones per hectare was characterized as a good density, and 150 abalones per hectare was unacceptable and needed protection. Well, here we are 8 years later, and now we're being told, well, that was wrong. A 600 to 1,000 wasn't enough, that we need to have 6,600. You know, I have yet to understand their justification for that. Now, I went back to the literature that they cite, which was a paper by Shepherd and Brown. It was a research paper in Australia, the original literature where they used to base their minimum viable population. And this was done on research on a species of abalone in Australia. And I was kind of alarmed because one of the first things that I read about minimum viable population is that the concept of minimum viable population has generated a large literature. See Goodman 87, Simberloff 88, but no minimum viable populations are known for any marine invertebrate. For terrestrial vertebrates, 5,000 to 10,000 individuals is usually regarded as adequate to prevent net loss of genetic diversity. And so, you know, I don't really feel that we've been done justice by being citing a species. And by the way, the same research indicates that the estimated historic densities on the abalone or the Australian abalones was between 30 to 50,000 abalones per hectare for those species in Australia. It's an entirely different species than we have here. And the suggested minimum viable population in the study was 3,000 abalone per hectare. So I understand where they got the 3,000. I just don't know that it applies to red abalone or pink abalone or any of the species that we have here, because they obviously have never been in densities of 30 to 50,000 abalones per hectare. You know, I don't know that it's a good comparison. I agree with the reasoning and that there could be a minimum viable population, but as of yet, we don't know exactly what that is. And that has to do with trying to maintain a stable density of the population. And there might be more than one level that's sustainable or could be stable.
Don, I don't want to interrupt because you have a lot of important things to say, but can you wrap it up a little? No offense.
Yeah, you know, what bothers me is that red abalone in the recovery portion of the plan are being treated as endangered. And the question I would like to ask is, do red abalone, the species, do they qualify as endangered? Because when you look at the ARMP, the threshold that they use of 2,000 animals per hectare, if it's below the minimum viable population, it's being called at risk, in need of recovery, and it's in the endangered category. And then if that's the case, then why aren't they being listed on the Endangered Species Act? You know, they're characterizing them as being endangered, even though they don't qualify as endangered. So, you know, that really puzzles me that for the sake of management, they're endangered up to a much higher level. But as far as the sustainability or the, you know, of the species, that's that they don't qualify. Now, the other question is whether or not it's okay to divide the species into separate populations for management purposes. Right now, it's divided north and south at San Francisco with an arbitrary line. It's not based on any biology whatsoever. Well, if that division of the population or the species is okay, then why shouldn't we be allowed to divide the populations in Southern California into individual management units or individual populations? So I think there's a double standard there with the way that the resource is being divided and then comparisons being made. Now, I think that the commercial divers, particularly Mr. Jim Marshall, has really put a good faith effort towards trying to present an alternative with alternative one that is reasonable and that it's a feasible alternative. And I feel like we've been ignored. And, you know, what I'd like to know is what would it take for the department to support that alternative? How low of a quota? How much data would they need? They criticized it because it hasn't been peer-reviewed and they don't feel that it would stand up to peer review. Well, fine, then let's have it peer-reviewed. In fact, I'd like to recommend that the entire plan go back to peer review because of the way the original peer review was handled and the fact that it now includes a wider range of alternatives and that all the alternatives should be on the table. You know, how small of a scale of fishery would be okay? Because right now, a hundred year closure, you know, I mean, I think that's not reasonable,
Don, I'm going to have to ask you to say in conclusion.
That's it.
Thank you.
You know, would it take for the department to support alternative one?
And we will get some answers for you. And I think Commissioner Rogers has a question.
Once again, I'm... Hello? Am I on? Okay. Once again, my apologies. I'm going to have to go jump on an airplane. A lot of what you say, Mr. Thompson, is very persuasive as it relates to the lack of data in particular with respect to biomass. I made my feelings known quite well, I think, last week. I find it very, very difficult for the Commission to be in a placed in a position to be making decisions regarding the viability of a population without population statistics. It's it's kind of intellectually unsupportable and morally, from the respect of breaking someone's rice bowl, impossible. So until we get such data, this commissioner is not going to be adopting any abalone plans. At least my vote is not going to be until we get the data. The department has very good reasons for not having that data, and in the main, and some that are frustrating. A lot of it relates to budgets. A lot of it relates to manpower. A lot of it relates to a whole bunch of other things. So I'm not placing any blame. I'm not assessing anything going on. I was not here during those periods of time, and as a consequence, I'm stepping into this fresh. That probably means I'm making some mistakes with respect to understanding the long-term nature of this process. All I'm telling you is that intellectually, the position that I now find myself in is not supportable. And with that, I have to leave.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Could you support one question?
Do you want a question?
As far as the sites that they're picking for their data, can you take it under consideration to change some of them? Because I don't feel that they're supportive of the overall population of abalone.
I think what you need to do is make those comments for the record with your card.
But you were taken off.
No, virtually everything that occurs here today, I will get.
Yeah.
So thank you for remaking your remarks. And once again, gentlemen, my apologies. I'm very sorry. I know how important this is, and from my remarks, I think you understand I feel the same way.
Yep. And people have suggested what you're suggesting at other meetings and will again, I'm sure. So make sure you bring that up for the record. Who's next? I'm just saying I'm not being tough on time here because it's a small group and I want everybody to be heard. Just be concise and don't repeat what other people said and we can all get out of here because we have to be out of the room by 9 o'clock and I want everybody to talk and I want to be able to have the department answer and maybe a little couple of questions back and forth. So we only have 45 minutes, so let's be respectful of each other.
Okay, good afternoon. My name's Gary Conklin. I'm a prior commercial abalone diver. And just real briefly, a couple minutes, I want to go over a couple things. One of the things I saw when you ran through some of the alternatives, when they listed their pros and their cons, it just really seemed biased towards opening a commercial fishery again. They listed the pros as opening the fishery, I believe short term or and then they headed right into the cons. But I think to highlight some of the pros, it would provide a public product. I believe it would reduce poaching by offering legal abalone on the market. Would create revenue, including landing taxes, money that goes to the processors, the divers, the tenders. And probably one of the most important things right now would also create new data that we have. We've had 8 years off, and nobody knows where we're going with this. And we've got a management plan, but I don't think an adequate stock assessment's been done. And while I'm talking about the stock assessment, I'd also like to refer to the area with the sea otters. I think that area needs to be looked at too, so we know what's out there. I'm from the Central Coast. I've done a lot of diving out there, and there are some well-populated areas out there, and I think they need to be looked at too and not left out of that loophole. I would like to see an alternative that would bring back the commercial fishery, and as some of the management tools they listed in the sport industry up there, They could be implemented or changed to allow that commercial fishery. Again, that's your size limits, your bag limits, also seasons. And like I said, the most important thing would be to get out there and get some data that I feel hasn't been adequately obtained in the last 8 years. And I'm just concerned. I don't want to see the fishery, especially from the Central Coast area where I'm from, kind of put on the back shelf because the otters are there, and we just kind of walk away from that. So, thank you.
The next speaker is Richard Poehler, followed by Jeff T.
Commissioner.
I've read so many letters from
members.
You.
I'd just like to ask a question of the biologists, whether they support the Farallon Island Rove Survey, and it was published in the management plan as acceptable. Yeah.
Do we support the Farallon Island Survey? Do we know what it is? I think.
Well, go ahead.
Well, basically, that's the only survey we have of the Farallon Island. So, based on that, that's the only thing we have to go on. Ideally, we'd like to go out and be able to do some more surveys at Farallons as well as the San Mateo Coast. But at this point in time, that ROV survey at the Farallons is the only data we have.
Okay, thanks. And obviously, you have a point of view about that. So, what is
that? Well, my point of view is that. I confronted Con Karpoff on that issue because when I left the islands, there was a substantial population of abalone out there that was in clear view. And when I did confront him my own being there and seeing what was there, I asked him if the survey was true and factual, that there was a major die-off there, and that I believe that the department should move to close the abalone fishery totally, North Coast and South Coast, until they could shake out all the facts and find out what actually happened there. He responded to me, and this was at a Recreational Abalone Advisory Committee meeting, that survey should have never been published, because it was not factual. But somehow, it found its way back into the final document. And this is what upsets me the most. The department's taken a position that San Mateo Coast has no viable populations. At a different RAC meeting, a number of years prior to the Rove survey, one of the fish and game biologists was making public comment and said there were no substantial abalone populations on the San Mateo Coast for public comment. When I confronted him, and because I had just been there the year before and dove in areas where I was commercially fishing, and I was thinking to myself that the populations that I was seeing in the areas that I was fishing were equal to what I had seen up in Northern California. In the area that I was in. So when I asked him, I said, Jerry, when was the last time you dove down at Pigeon Point? He told me at that time that he hadn't. I said, well, how do you know there's no abalone down there? He goes, well, that's what I've been told. And here's a fish and game biologist making public comment about something that he has no actual knowledge about. And it puts a bad light on the area that I fish. There were in the harbor that we fished about 19 divers, I would estimate that 33% of those divers had purchased their fishing licenses in the 2-for-1 buyout. And so I believe that these people didn't go into the business not knowing what was there, and the substantial amount of abalone that are on the San Mateo Coast and out in the Farallon Islands. I just want to make that point. Thank you.
Jeff Teague, followed by Bill Bernard.
Hi. Hi, my name is Jeff Tai, and I'm a recreational diver or skin diver for abalone. I mainly go up northern for red abalone. And I just wanted to point out that I'm all for having some type of regulations to protect our national resource, because I'd like to see them for our kids in the future. But I also believe that there's a viable population so that we can actually dive and collect now. I believe that with a little bit some management, that we should do quite well. But my only concern is the index sites. Yeah, well, one of, but the most important one is that we use sites that show a viable population, not high usage spots that are considered moderate when they're actually high usage. I feel that we should take a look at the overall population, because a lot of the coastline is private. You can't get access to it. The only way you can get there is by boat. And a lot of people go out on the weekends. They take their float tube and they go out and they go to the spots that they can get to. And they're not, they don't belong to clubs. They're just out collecting a few. I think that we really should consider taking different spots and using them for our information, because there seems to be a big void. And I'd appreciate it if we could take a good look at this and make a very conscious decision so that we can enjoy them now and not have to wait so long. You know, that would be very important. That's very important to me.
Okay, thank you.
The final speaker card I have is Bill Bernard.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Bill Bernard. I'm a recreational abalone diver. I'm also a member of a diving recreational club. Actually, I'd like to do is go ahead and build upon some work that's already been done in a positive atmosphere. The addition of the four new sites is a move in a positive direction, and it's building upon work that it's been done in the past here, and it's a move in the right direction, because if we're looking at a true fishery that represents a healthy population, and you're going to use the index sites as the indication whether you're going to close a fishery or not, you want to use index sites that represent the population as a whole. In the original draft abalone recovery management plan, the index sites were high use sites, and that was recognized, and that's why the adjustment's been made into the current plan now, addition of four more moderate sites. The moderate sites basically are an opinion of other people or recreational divers that are high use sites. Such as the locations of the new additions of Sonoma County, Ocean Cove, and Timber Cove. Now, Ocean Cove currently is a very high-use recreational site. It's a private campground. It's located in the northern part of Sonoma County. Timber Cove, which is located approximately about 5 miles south of Ocean Cove, is also another private site and open to the public. These sites are historically in the recreational diving industry have been high use sites for many, many, many years. And no survey data has been done on these particular sites, and they are planning to be added to the protocol, correct? One of the questions I have was, as I understood originally, that following from Commissioner Flores's and Commissioner Kellogg from the Eureka meeting, that they were asking for the direction in the Department of Fish and Game to add the four more additional sites, and they did that. But I understood their intent was, or I thought their intent was supposed to be of low-use sites. So the question I guess I have would be that. One of the questions I have is why was the selection of moderate site used? And how did they get it using determining those were moderate sites and assume that was based upon the abalone return card data? There was some other issues about automatic closure in the abalone recovery management plan, and it was under table 7.4, and that's the table that deals with the total allowable catch and the adjustments to the total allowable catch, and it was item number 4. And item 4, but correct me if I'm wrong on this, is the fishery will close at 3,000 abalone per hectare acre. I don't know how that's written. Is that a legal way that the abalone fishery will be closed? In other words, will that power be taken away from the commission for the first time in history? When you reach this 3,000 abalone per hectare acre, does that automatic closure? I don't know how that legally that's interpreted, but that's how that's written in print. And that was an area of concern with it also. Once again, just recap on the reflecting the industry or the recreational aspect of looking at everything. Yeah, you need to help me through this. I'm not used to speaking in public. The main point here was, I think it's been a fantastic thing of getting the 4 more additional sites. Building upon that is looking towards a direction of looking at, yes, we have a recreational fishery here. It is the way to look at it. If you're using the high-use sites, and there was only 4 of your high-use sites, yeah, there was the possibility of abalone being out there that weren't being accounted for and closing a fishery down based upon high-use sites. The high-use sites are easily accessible sites, and they're also sites that were, I'm assuming, that it was easy for the department to go ahead and do the surveys at these sites because of boat launch capabilities. In fact, the addition of the new 4 index sites, all 4 of them, the 2 of them in Mendocino County and 2 of them in Sonoma County, are boat launch capabilities. The problem with the, without repeating myself, and I actually have photographs here to offer as evidence into the situation, is in Mendocino County, we're talking about Casper Cove and Todd's Point. Todd's Point is actually located in downtown Fort Bragg. It's right at the Noyo Harbor, and it seems to me that using a place that where the public once again can be really accessing this area as a index site is, and calling it moderate, I don't understand how we got to that point. And also with Casper Cove, Casper Cove is a river inlet, and I don't know how that would, is Casper Cove was a Creel survey site, I believe, also. And based upon that, I don't see where Casper Cove, being a river inlet, is suitable habitat and support high densities of abalone populations. And the selection of that site as a moderate site or calling it a moderate site seems to be off also. Then in, once again, in Sonoma County, Ocean Cove, is a mega campground. Dive clubs have been going there for many, many years. That particular cove area is very well ready, high use, and doesn't have many density of abalone. Although the card may be being marked as Ocean Cove, but it's actually that area, because it could be all the way up to the Salt Point boundary and be called Ocean Cove. First of all, here, I don't mean to, sound a little like I'm attacking people. I respect you folks. You all work hard. You all have families, and you have, jobs you have to do like everybody else. Okay, a couple other items I want to touch on here. I need an explanation of the difference between the 2 types of data, the type of data where you have fishery independent data and fishery dependent data, and I didn't understand the different 2 and how that's used in the assessment in the plan here.
that about it, unless somebody else has something they want to remind me of? Nope. Thank you very much.
You're going to be up there right now? No, you're going to start answering things, John?
I answer a couple things, and this gentleman in particular. I think with regards to index sites, I believe we did use the punch card data to determine level of use. And that is one indicator. You're correct that it's probably not a perfect indicator. And I think we're perfectly open to looking at a revision of those additional four index sites if we need to. I wouldn't want to change all of them, but if you wanted to change one or two of them to what you might consider a low use site that where there are Avalon, and I'd say get with Ian and give him that information, and we can always build that in. The
is there a list of the actual number one highest use site down through the? You got eight sites picked. Which one was the least? Is there a list somewhere that shows all the sites?
Not in the plan. We could show you that list. I think the big caveat here is just make sure it's somewhere that is monitorable. I mean, don't give me a site that's down a 100-foot cliff and is going to be difficult for any diver, regardless of whether it's a researcher, to get to. You want to be realistic, and again, the point being that we want to actually be able to monitor the site. But you're right, it doesn't have to be a site that's heavily used or so easy to get to that everybody goes there.
One of the things that seems to be of concern is the placement of the transects. You know, when you say Yoshi Cove, I don't really know if you're going to place transects all the way up to the Salt Point boundary or right there in the Ocean Cove. There's a lot of subject to where these transects...
Right, and actually the methodology is actually to do randomly placed transects. I was talking to somebody earlier today. The problem with abalone with doing a fixed transect is that abalone will move in and out of areas at various stages and at various years, etc. And so if you go back to the exact same spot over and over, you might show no abalone when in reality 100 yards away there's plenty. And so when we talk about an index site, it's not a single dive or a single transect. It's many, many, many dives going to random spots to make sure that you get a picture of what the whole area looks like. So you're right. It's not one tiny little spot. It's a broad area. But I think what you should do is discuss it with Ian or email or whatever so that in the final draft that we bring you in August, perhaps we will change a couple of those sites. We're certainly open to discussing that. So I don't think we can solve the question right here and now. Had a couple other points, and Ian may or may not want to jump in. Going back to Mr. Thompson's many, many questions, and I don't think I can answer all of them right now, but there were a few that I think we need to bear in mind because you'll be making some decisions. And I think the document he showed you, the Fisheries Management for Fishermen's, is a great general overview. I encourage people to read that document. It does deal, as he noted, with the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation Act, which is a federal management act. It deals with a certain type of species. It is stretching a bit to apply that to any species, in particular a benthic invertebrate, which is significantly different than a finfish species. But I think a lot of the points are true and good, and I think there's some good information there. Regarding broad size range, he's right that in an unfished population, you do get more larger individuals, and that's probably true in an invertebrate population as well. The point being that in most places in Southern California, with probably the single exception of San Miguel Island, you don't have those big old individuals at all. So when we say broad size range, we're really just saying we want small ones and large ones, not necessarily more or less of either, but they need to be present in some respect. And what that shows is that not only do you have recruitment of young animals, but those animals are actually surviving and growing up into adulthood and reproducing themselves. So it's not necessarily that we're looking for a particular level or number of big adults. It's that they need to be present in those areas. And also that is the starting point for surveys. With regards to biomass estimates, I would note that of the vast majority of managed fish stocks are not under a biomass estimate at this point. That's something that is relatively rare. In the few cases where we do have biomass estimates, in particular for groundfish species, those estimates are usually pretty, showing the population in a much poorer state than you would even suspect without the biomass estimate. I'm not saying that we shouldn't strive to get a biomass estimate for abalone, but it's certainly not a requirement for management. And going with a discrete plan for numbers of abalone per hectare is a far sight better than no plan at all. It gives you a goal and it gives you a way to manage the fishery. The question about in how many total hectares do you need to see that 6,600 number? I believe Ian pointed out in his presentation, it's not a certain amount of habitat, but it's certain index sites where we know fishing occurred and where we know large populations did occur in the past. We may not know exactly how many there were, but we do know from the extraction levels that there was a viable population at some point. With regards to is 2,000 a minimum viable population, again, going with best readily available information is the best we can do, and the data from Santa Rosa Island and other locations in Southern California shows that at levels below 2,000 abalone per hectare, the populations continued to decline. They did not come back. And that's why we call it a minimum viable. We're afraid at that point that the populations may not ever recover, regardless of whether we fish it or not. Abalone is a benthic invertebrate. It has a very different life history than many fish species. It reproduces by spawning into the water column, and when you get below certain densities, reproduction simply doesn't occur, and that's true in many different mollusk species throughout the world that are more similar to abalone than other species, and in particular, abalone species are obviously a good estimate, though it may be a different species, and though the total population may be much higher, it is the best readily available information. That's probably all I want to get into. I think you heard a lot tonight, and I think Ian and Pete have some things to go on. If the commission feels there's some changes needed to the plan, we're happy to hear it. But you know, we feel that the plan has had significant review. It has had a lot of public comment, has been changed based on that comment, and I think adopting the plan in order to move forward with managing and recovering is an important step in the overall game.
And in August, you're presenting us with 7 alternatives, aren't you?
You do have a variety of management alternatives in the plan. You have our preferred alternative and the other alternatives.
Right.
You are perfectly able of picking any of those. Also, again, the numbers in the plan for fishery closure, for instance, those are at which point the department would come to you and say, we need to close the fishery. It is
right,
up to the commission's discretion.
They still have to come
to
us.
That's always up to, and that's standard procedure.
Right. Okay. Real quick. Yeah, I had 4 questions, but you answered them. Like Mr. Rogers, who just left, I'm concerned about data gaps and making decisions based on data that I'm not comfortable with. You know, I know this has been an 8-year process. I wasn't here during those 8 years. Not blaming anybody. We want to start doing something that obviously protects the resource and lets people fish again. We have 7 alternatives coming before us. We have 3 more hearings. All of these folks talking to each other and talking to the department is helping to make this a living document, if you will. And so I'm going to reserve my comments and questions for the final push because I still have to study some more and learn some more. I'm willing to talk to people, you know, on or off the record later, an email, whatever, if you want to talk to me. I know the biologists will talk to you folks. So, you know, you have an ongoing process going on. Whether we eventually agree will still be determined. But, you know, I think you have some real important and worthwhile points that you're making. And I just want to make sure they're all being considered by the department. And I think the department is considering them. So I just want to say I don't have any more questions, but if we have 1 or 2 more, and we don't want this to be a debate, but maybe you can do a gentlemanly direct question.
and go ahead and come up to the mic because that way it gets on the
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment with the some of the response I heard just now. This idea that densities are not sustainable below 2,000 abalones per hectare, that's not consistent with the published literature that and research that the department has done on densities within the Seattle range for red abalones. Now, those densities went from around 1,000 abalones per hectare down to around 75 abalones per hectare. And it's well documented that they've stabilized and that they're at low stable densities. And now they're reserved a very cryptic habitat, and you have generally have smaller size animals, and it's a different population. But it's still a sustainable and it's still a stable population. So to say that you have to have 2,000 abalones per hectare to have a sustainable or a stable population, there's a big inconsistency there. And the other question that I didn't get a response to was, what would it take for the department to support alternative one? And I'd like to get a feel from them, you know, how could we persuade them that that's a viable alternative, and
one of the ways so. That the commission chooses alternative one that would persuade the department to support alternative one. You know, we're the ones that finally make that decision, not them. They do their analysis and they make a recommendation to us. We're going to be actually voting on the preferred alternative eventually. So I'm just saying, they might not agree with you at this point that alternative one is the place to be, but we're the commission that's going to be deciding that. So I think this is where you should be putting the emphasis, because obviously they chose another alternative. You know, that's all I can tell you, because they're not going to follow along with what your recommendations. Well, we choose differently than what the department recommends.
The commission rarely chooses something that the department.
Oh, that's not true. Oh, that's so not true. Ask the department. they get crazed over what we do.
Yeah, we definitely don't get our way with the commission lately, in particular.
We're smarter than we look.
In regards to the density question, emergent density versus cryptic density, our hope is that Southern California is at a cryptic density so it can recover. I mean, that the point being that if Southern California is at such a low point right now that there are no cryptic abalone, and then it won't recover. They won't be there to reproduce. Clearly, it's not at an emergent density that mimics that of the North Coast or other areas in the world. So you're right that there are areas with otter population and abalone population that coexist, and abalones historically existed in areas where there were otters, and that is a fact. Is that a fishable population? No. And that is an issue that we cannot allocate between a threatened marine mammal and a commercial fishery. So I think getting into the details of that right now is not possible. And with regards to what would get us to support alternative one, in our opinion, the language of the act and the information provided to us gives us reason to support our preferred alternative above that alternative.
I just have one more question.
Basically, it was the same thing that I have to say is that the department has no problem supporting population densities in otter areas. They have no problem with that at all. The only problem they have is supporting the take of abalone by the general human population, if that's the way I want to put it. Another problem is a lot of areas that were once populated fish are in highly polluted areas. Now, otters haven't been able to take off those animals, and you still see cryptic animals. But in areas where people had a bag limit, fishing seasons, and size limits, those animals are gone. And basically, that's in the L.A. Bight.
Right.
Highly polluted. DDT dumped in there. Has anybody ever studied the effects of DDT on the animals? I mean, it's affected all these species on the Channel Islands.
Yeah.
So now what you're saying is that we can't fish until places have this 6,600 animals per hectare, they'll probably never get there. So it's a pipe dream. You fish the pockets of animals and the areas that they're in, and that's the way it is. I mean, you're not going to see recovery in a lot of those areas, ever.
Thanks.
But you're basing the whole fishery on something that's not going to happen.
One final comment from John.
Responding to that, again, we're not looking for recovery in Los Angeles, and that's not one of our key locations. We're not looking for recovery, in fact, on most of the Southern California coast. We're looking at San Diego, which does still have some abalone. We've done recent surveys there that show that there are some populations off Point Loma. We're looking at three islands where there are some existing abalone, in particular San Miguel, where there's a fairly good population. So we're not looking for recovery in the types of areas that are heavily degraded the way you defined it. The hope would be that these areas that are key locations are actually able to recover.
Okay, thank you, folks. And this will conclude tonight's hearing.
Do you want to go over the meeting schedule?
The meeting schedule, just so you'll know, in case folks want to come to the next meetings. I had it right here someplace. Oh, Bob, where are you? Here we go. August 4th in Santa Rosa, August 9th in Eureka, and August 16th in San Diego. And then the commission will be taking up the document for action on August 18th and 19th in San Luis Obispo. So let's all keep talking, and I'm sure I'll see all of you many times. Santa Rosa is to be determined.
It hasn't been pinned down yet.
Sorry
about
that.
You can call the commission office
or go on our website.
You can log on to department
website.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, I have the gavel. That's so cool.
Take the room.
Okay.